Okay, this week's Parsha is Parsha Tzav, and we begin on page 568. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe Lemar. Hashem spoke to Moshe, saying, Tzav es Aaron vespan of Lemar. Speak to Aaron and to his sons, saying, Zois teras ha'ola. This is the law of the burnt offering. Hiya ha'ola. It is the burnt offering, al mikdal mizbeach kol halayla, on the flame on the altar all the night, at abeker until the morning. Ve'esh hamizbeach tu kadboi, and the fire of the altar shall be kept aflame on it. And it's this part of the pasuk that we're going to focus on, where it says ve'esh hamizbeach tu kadboi, and the fire of the altar shall be kept aflame on it. So let's take a look at the copy of the Sefer HaChinuch that I gave you in the English translation, and let's read it. The commandment of lighting fire on the altar every day. To burn fire on the altar every day perpetually, as it is stated, a perpetual fire shall burn on the altar. Really should skip a few psukim down to the bottom of the page, back into the Chumash, where it says, V'ha'esh al-mizbeach tukat boi, the fire on the altar shall be kept burning on it, lo'y sichbeh, it shall not be extinguished. Ubiar alea kain eitzel abeker babeker, and the kain shall kindle wood upon it every morning. Okay, so here is where the mitzvah really is, where it says vo'ish l'mizbeach tukat bay, the fire on the altar shall be kept burning on it. Leisich bay, you shall not extinguish it. So this is the mitzvah: a perpetual fire shall be burned on the altar, which means to burn fire on the altar every day perpetually. And the explanation of perpetual came that it means to say, to place wood in the morning and in the afternoon. Every morning and afternoon, there is wood placed on the Mizbeach. Now, and in the elucidation, they may their memory be blessed, said, this is a Gemara in Yuma, expanding more upon this idea about bringing wood up onto the Mizbeach every day, every morning and every night. Even though the fire descends from the heavens, it is a commandment to bring it also from the commoners. Now, what that means is that we know, it's in next week's Parsha, that when the Mishkan was dedicated, the very first offerings that were brought on the Mizbeach came from a fire that descended from heaven. And the Gemara says, even though the fire descends from the heavens, which I always thought would mean that even though you had that fire that originally descended from heaven, there's still a mitzvah to bring your own wood and to basically create your own fire. The wording, though, of the Gemara is really in present tense, which is even though the fire descends from the heavens, which sounds like somewhere or another that original fire that descended continues to descend. There's this continuing descending of fire from heaven onto the altar. We'll have to see what that means. We'll have to see if we can understand exactly what that means. But the point is that even though there really is a source of fire from the Mizbeach, which is the fire from heaven that descended the first time in next week's parasha when the Mishkan was first dedicated, so even though there is a source of fire and we wouldn't need to have to add any fire, still there's a mitzvah for us to bring wood and to create our own fire. Now, from the roots of the commandment, whenever we're going to say for HaChinuch, we have the Shar Shei HaMitzvah, the roots of the mitzvah, a way of understanding the mitzvah. So from the roots of the commandment, we need to preface that the thing is known amongst us and among every sage, that the great miracles that God does for people in his great goodness, he always does hiddenly. An interesting rule that he's mentioning here. That any time Hashem performs a miracle, he does it hiddenly. Let's see. And these matters appear a little as if they were truly done by the way of nature or close to nature. And even with the miracle of the splitting of the sea, which was an open miracle, it is written there, and the Lord moved the sea with a powerful eastern wind all of the night, and he made the sea into a dry plain, and he split the waters. Even Kriyas Yamsuf, which was an open miracle, was a miracle that had with it something natural that accompanied it. that eastern wind was blowing a whole night before the water split, which gives an appearance, at least, that the splitting of the water came about in some degree through this wind, which again really doesn't make any sense that the wind should be able to do that. But at the same time, the Rabbanu Shalom brings something natural to accompany the miracle, to kind of hide the miracle. So basically, you've got what he starts off with, is that when Hashem does a miracle for a person through his kindness, it's hidden. It's what we call a hidden miracle. It's like Purim. It's like everything in nature that is a miracle, but it's hidden. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu does a person a kindness, in essence, if I understand the Sefer Chinuch correctly, in essence, there is a miracle there, but it's hidden. Purim was a hidden miracle. Typically, the way the Rebbe Hashem does miracles for a person, does a kindness, does a miracle, Hashem does something as a kindness for a person, it's typically hidden. And even something that's not a hidden miracle, like the splitting of the Red Sea, the Rebbe Hashem will still, to some degree, hide it by, as we see, he brought something natural accompanying it. Now he continues. And the enlightened ones will understand that this matter of concealment is because of the loftiness of the master and the lowliness of the receiver. Somehow or another, the understanding of this concept that Hashem will bring a miracle in a hidden manner is because of his greatness and our lowliness. Let's get back and see. Let's finish up the paragraph first. And due to this matter, did he command us to burn fire on the altar, even though fire descended there from the heavens, in order to hide the miracle? Now, this next line, they put in the brackets here also. I'm not sure if that word also should really belong here. I'm going to read it without the word also, because the word also doesn't appear in the Hebrew text. It appears that the fire that came down from the heavens was not visible when it came down because of the reason that we said. Except for the eighth day of the inauguration and that of Gideon, Manoach, and Eliyahu, which was visible. Meaning we have other cases where a fire descended from heaven. And when that fire descended from heaven, we know that fire descended from heaven, everybody saw it. In next week's parsha, when the fire descends from heaven at the dedication of the Mishkan, everybody saw it. When Eliyahu Bar HaKarmel, when he was on Mount Carmel, and he performed this, and the fire came down from heaven to show that he was the true prophet and all the other prophets were false, there was a fire that they saw. So we do have times where a fire from heaven descended and it was seen. But he seems to be saying, but this fire that we're saying descends from heaven constantly, which could essentially be the fire for the Karbanos on the Mizbeach, that he says it would seem was hidden. Why was it hidden? It was hidden because of this concept, that the miracles that Hashem does are hidden. But what made it hidden? What made it hidden was the fact that we're adding fire to it. If we weren't adding fire to it, then that miracle wouldn't be hidden. The fire, in essence, was hidden. The actual miracle was not an open miracle, it was a hidden miracle. And why is it a miracle? Because of the fact as he has this rule that Hashem typically does a miracle in a hidden way. At the same time that there is this hidden miracle, it's not open, you don't see a fire coming down. There is a hidden miracle, this fire that seems to be descending on a constant basis is hidden. And at the same time, you know, if we wouldn't be adding this fire, you know, if we weren't adding this fire, would it still be hidden? It's not clear to me exactly. There seems to be this essence of the fire being hidden, essentially, and it's hidden because Hashem hides his miracles. At the same time, we are all, but the Sefer Chinuch himself says, we're adding fire because we're trying to make it seem that it's our fire that's burning the sacrifices.
It's the same fire?
No, it seems to be two different fires.
Does it look different?
I don't know. I don't know. It seems to be that for those who understand, they know that this fire on the Mizbeach is a fire that's burning because of a fire that is constantly descending from heaven. At the same time, we're also throwing in wood. Not only are we throwing in wood, we're lighting the wood. And so we have them both together. That's my understanding. Now, we have them both together. If you look at it, what seems to be burning the carbon? Our fire. But essentially, there is that other hot fire, that heavenly fire that's burning the carbonus. That fire is, again, it may have descended the first time it was seen. After that, it's not seen. And we are participating in hiding that miracle by making it by putting our own fire there, that appears that that's the fire that's burning the sacrifices. So he's saying a very interesting concept. And looking just at his example that he brings, which is from Kriyas Yamsu, the splitting of the Red Sea, where he says, even that which was an open miracle, because, again, the Sefer Echidah seems to be categorizing, we know everybody categorizes miracles into two types. Nisim Nistarim, hidden miracles. Nisim Gluyim, open miracles. Hidden miracles is nature. It's a hidden miracle. It's a miracle like an open miracle because it's Hashem's decree, Hashem making it happen. But it's a hidden miracle. The Sefer Echidah says that we have hidden miracles. Typically, the miracles that Hashem does are going to be hidden, which are all the kindnesses that He does for people and for the world. They're hidden. And even the ones that are open, which like Kriyas Yamsuf, that also there was an element of hiding it through some level of nature being involved. Now, the Ramban in Parshas Noach talks about this, about the fact that Hashem minimizes a miracle. And I can't remember if he says it openly or not, but my understanding of that Ramban has always been, based on what I've seen, is that the reason there is always something natural that's coming together with an open miracle is because if an open miracle didn't have anything natural with it, then there'd be no bechira. There'd be no ability, there'd be no choice to be able to deny it. Nothing can go on in this world without the possibility of denying it. Nothing that Hashem does can happen without the possibility of somebody denying that it is what Hashem wants or that it is what Hashem has done. So if you'd have a miracle, splitting the Red Sea without anything accompanying it, there would have been no way of denying it, that it was a miracle. But now that there's this wind coming along, all you need is a little something, and the deniers have what to latch on to.
They talked about that. I've seen a show where they talked about the east wind, like an answer to the different things, and they mentioned the east wind.
Okay, so there you got it. But again, yeah. Naturally, that makes no sense.
It hasn't happened again.
Right, hasn't happened again and again. Who ever heard of a wind that can do such a thing?
Right.
But at the same time, the wind was brought in to the miracle to allow someone to hide it, but to actually not so much hide it, but to allow someone to deny. Because there always has to be free will. Everything has to have the choice of following Hashem and not following Hashem. That is how I've always understood the Ramban. He doesn't say that, the Sefer Echidah. He seems to be saying that there's a rule that Hashem hides His miracles, and even the open miracles are somewhat hidden also. And the reason they're hidden comes from the loftiness of the master and the lowliness of the receiver. It almost sounds like we can't receive this miracle without it being hidden. We wouldn't be able to receive it. We wouldn't be able to retain it. We wouldn't be able to be the receptacle for it. I mean, this is just my. I didn't see the explanation. This is just what struck me from these words. In essence, an open miracle that wouldn't be concealed in any manner is we're too lowly to be able to receive it. As human beings, we're too lowly to be able to receive it. We have to have some kind of the miracle has to be hidden. There has to be some kind of a natural involvement for us as human beings to be able to receive it. Otherwise, it would be a purely godly act, which would just be beyond our ability to receive. That's just the suggestion I'm making. I don't know if it makes sense. I can't tell you if that's the explanation. It's just something that struck me here from these words that, again, he's not saying it's about giving the possibility for denial. He's saying it's about the loftiness of the master, the lowliness of the receiver. That's the word, receiver, right? Yeah. The receiver is too low to be able to receive a pure miracle. And therefore, there's got to be some kind of concealment to it. And most of the time, it's completely concealed. Even the times when it's not completely concealed, it'll be somewhat concealed. So we have this miracle of the fire descending from heaven on a daily basis that's not going to be open, because that's not the way Hashem does it. It's going to be concealed. How's it going to be concealed? Number one, you can't see it. Can't see it descending. And number two, we're going to be adding, we're going to be putting our own fire on, adding our own fire to the altar that makes it appear that our fire is a fire that's doing everything the altar needs to do. One second, Barry.
But does God want all of us to be believers?
He wants us to be believers, but he wants to give us the choice, not to, the possibility not to believe. That's the whole idea of Bechira.
This is Rambam, this is not
so. No, that's as a general rule, right? Okay. There's such a thing called Bechira, which means that we're given the ability not to believe or to defy Hashem. Hashem wants us not to defy him, but everything has the ability for, there always has to be the ability to do that.
It's a free will, yeah.
Yeah, what were we going to say?
Yeah, is there any disagreement what's hidden, what's not hidden? I don't know, Purim, Hanukkah, is it all hidden?
Purim is always called hidden.
Why?
Because it is, because there was nothing supernatural.
Well,
hidden just means it's not out in the open. It doesn't mean that you can't recognize it. It doesn't mean like Purim. Right? The whole idea of Purim is that all these things coming together have to be Hashem. Okay, but the actual manifestation of the miracle comes within a natural means. Hanukkah is interesting. The discussion about Hanukkah, there seems to be a difference of opinion. The menorah is an open miracle.
Right.
That's an open miracle. Right. The war, there are different opinions whether you call that an open miracle or not.
The same as Purim.
So what is then?
No.
So what is natural?
No. Some hold that the miracle was the war was an open miracle. There were too few Hashmonaim to be able to beat the Syrian Greek army.
1967.
No, you didn't. Not with the numbers that they say they had, that the Hashmonaim had.
So what is hidden in the Hanukkah miracle?
With the lights?
Yeah.
Well, of the candles?
Right.
Good question. I have to think about that.
Eight.
Unless you just say the mere fact Let's say, I don't know what the answer to that.
Like burning for 8 days is sort of hidden, no?
It's not hidden, it's pretty clear. How does something burn for 8 days like that? Only a certain amount of oil to burn for 8 days, that doesn't happen. Okay. Well, neither does wind splitting water happen, but there's something there that allows you to think that. Even according to him, that it's hidden means to say that, you know, somewhere down the, someone would be able. How does the wind, right? How does the wind conceal to some degree the miracle by the splitting of the Red Sea? Only because someone would somehow or another apply it, even though it makes no sense, it would be applied, right? Maybe there's something in. I don't know what to say.
He says it's impossible for us to understand it. It would be impossible for us to see how this is actually done, how the miracle is performed. So we maybe see the final result, but we don't see how Hashem makes it happen. And this is, we are not equipped in understanding or seeing. Maybe that's what he's saying.
Does that answer your question?
No. I was moving to trying to explain why he says that the receiver could not.
Yeah.
So one explanation to that would be that what the receiver cannot see is the manner in which the miracle is performed, rather than just the miracle.
I don't see the difference.
Well, Hashem needed to do something for that to happen.
But every miracle, every time we're talking about the miracle happening, it's the happening. I mean, the sea is splitting, right? Now, without the wind blowing, it just would have split.
And how much wind was there? Yeah.
It just would have split, right? Yeah. So it's always, you know, as the miracle happens, there's something concealing the miracle, the happening of the miracle.
Well, masking it a little bit.
And I'm just thinking that, you know, so on the one hand, Hashem created this nature, laws.
Right.
On the other hand, said if he would start doing miracles, he would destroy what he just created, basically. So he would destroy the nature by the
miracles. The laws of nature, yeah.
They completely conflict. So why would he in the left hand create a nature and the right hand destroy it? So it definitely,
But there are times that he has done that.
Yeah, so sometimes, but not always.
Fine. The question is, though, he seems to be saying that when he does it, he still does it in a concealed manner. Because, again, he seems to be saying you've got this constant... Again, he starts off with, he starts off, the great miracles that God does for people in his greatness, he always does hiddenly. And these matter appear as a little as if they were truly done by way of nature or close to nature. As even with the miracle of the splitting of the sea. I know, it sounds to me from the wording that he's talking about a certain group of miracles. And then there's even the splitting of the Red Sea, which was an open miracle. So he sounds like before he wasn't talking about open miracles. He's talking about not open miracles, which is basically nature.
So it's a big resistance against miracles because, it sounds like, why don't we do it everything?
It depends how you define miracle. Because it depends how you define miracle. Now, we typically, we call something a miracle when we see something change. Even the Ramban says in Parashas Boy, the famous Ramban Parashas Boy by Tzias Mitzrayim, is that from the open miracles, we realize everything's a miracle. Right? Because when nature just goes, we think it just goes. That's how we perceive, and that's how we land up kind of thinking and seeing it. So then when Hashem comes and changes miracle, changes the nature, which we call a miracle, so we see he's involved, we see he's following what's going on, he's running what's going on, and everything he's running what's going on. When things are staying the same, he's running it too. So that everything is the act of Hashem. That's what we always call a miracle. When we see, that's an act of Hashem. All right, let's move on. All right, so this is the first part. This first part he's explaining this idea of what we said from the Gemara in Yuma, that even though the fire descends from heaven, there was still a mitzvah to make our own fire. But as we know, the halacha is, and the Sefer Chinuch explains later, that the Torah's obligation of constantly having a fire is actually the idea that there are a number of fires on the altar. There's a fire upon which the sacrifices are brought. There's a fire. There's one fire for that. There's another fire for burning the incense, and there's another fire that's there for the sake of being there. So now we continue. But we will still need to say, what is the idea of the commandment to light a fire on the altar besides the fire that is needed there for the sacrifice? Because we know that's the halacha. There's another there, there's a fire there that's not even for the sacrifice. It's there. And it appears on the level of the simple understanding that it is like the matter that we wrote about the commandment of the bread of display. The bread of display is what we call the lechem aponim, which was the bread that was on the shulchan, on the table inside the Mishkan, right? One of the vessels in the Mishkan was the shulchan, and the shulchan had lechem aponim, a special bread, 12 breads that were there from week to week. Now we're gonna look at that Sefer HaChinuch after we finish this. But he says, based on the understanding of what we see in that mitzvah, there is of the following principle: that man is blessed according to his deeds in which he is involved, in accordance with the will of his creator. Meaning, you receive Hashem's goodness according to following the manner of how you act in the service of Hashem. The way you act in the service of Hashem, in that manner, you receive His blessing. And through this approach, we said that blessing is found in all ordinary bread as a result of our involvement in the commandment of holy bread. It is as if you would say, metaphorically, that the blessing spreads in its type of object. By giving us a mitzvah involving bread, which is the lechem aponim, our involvement in the mitzvah of lechem aponim now brings blessing to all our bread. And so too, is the involvement in the commandment of the daily fire that a person will be blessed in the manner of fire that he has. After that, you have mitzvah 97?
Yeah.
This is embarrassing, especially since I'm on film. I forgot to put in the rest of that Sefer Achinuch. All right, let me tell you what he says. I'll tell you what he says. Okay. And so too is the involvement in the commandment of the daily fire, that a person will be blessed in the manner of the fire that he has. All right, let's see if you can guess. What manner of fire that you have would this mitzvah of fire bring blessing to you? Meaning he's saying now, the same way the lechem apanim, the involvement in the lechem apanim, the action in which you are involved with serving Hashem, and what that action now spreads blessing in its kind, in a similar thing, meaning you do a mitzvah with bread, that brings blessings to your bread. Okay? Now you have a mitzvah to make a fire, that brings blessings to fire. Blessings to your fire. Not another mitzvah. It brings blessing to you. Means blessing to you, just like the lechem upon him, we're saying brings blessings to our bread, to our food, to our sustenance. The mitzvah of making the fire in the mizbeach is going to bring blessing to our fire. My understanding, again, I think we could. It would be better if we had it in front of us, but we don't. It means our body heat.
Body?
Body heat. Because he talks about how sometimes if your body heat is out of control, you can die from it. So basically, by being involved in the mitzvah of with a mitzvah of fire, that now brings blessing to our fire. Our fire means the heat of our body. Our body heat, which is so important for its functioning. That's what he says. So he's explaining, again, so he's not explaining, you know, again, what is the meaning of that fire on the Mizbeach. He's not explaining that. But what he is explaining is that one way of understanding what is happening is that this mitzvah of making a fire is the means by which we bring blessing to the fire within us. The same way the lechem apanim does that with our bread, that's what the fire in the mizbeach does. To take a look at mitzvah 97, which is really going back to Parashas Truma, but once he mentioned it, it was worthwhile that we take a look at it. Mitzvah 97, the commandment of arranging the bread of display and the frankincense, which is to always place bread in the temple in front of God, as it is stated, on the table you shall set the bread of display to before be always. That's a pasuk that we had in Parashas Truma. You've got the shulchan, you've got the table, and on the table you set the bread of, he calls the lechem hapanim, because of the bread of display. Okay, now, it is from the roots of this commandment that God, blessed be He, commanded us the constant commandment of the bread. Hashem gave us this constant mitzvah of bread on account that through it a man lives. And as a result, the commandment is needed by him for blessing to always be found in his bread. And from our involvement in it to fulfill the commandment of God, may he be blessed, the divine will and blessing will descend upon us. And that which is similar to it will be blessed. And according to each and every manner upon which he places the conglomeration of his focus, his thoughts, and his activities by way of a commandment, according to them, a similar blessing will emerge upon him. Isn't that fascinating? He's saying, whatever you go ahead and whatever you do, each and every matter upon which you place your focus, your thoughts, your activities, by way of a commandment, meaning anytime you are now involved in a mitzvah, whether it be according to each and every matter upon which he places the conglomeration of his focus, his thoughts, and his activities by way of a commandment, but anytime he again focuses his thoughts and puts his actions into a mitzvah, according to them, a similar blessing will emerge upon him. And so I have found in Ramban, and it is like the matter that they, may their memory be blessed, said, this is a Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, bring the Omer in front of me at Pesach in order that the grain in the fields will be blessed for you. You put your involvement in a mitzvah of grain, you'll be blessed, your grain will be blessed. Pour the water in front of me on the festival of Sukkot in order that the rains of blessing shall be blessed for you in the coming year. You do a mitzvah with water, your water will be blessed. In order, pour the water in front of me on the festival, in order that the rains of blessing will be blessed for you in the coming year. Blow the ram's horn in front of me in order to remember the binding of Yitzchak. That's a little different. That last one. There, the point is, you're blowing the shofar, right, in order to remember the binding of Yitzchak. But it's not really different, because who's remembering the binding of Yitzchak so we're blowing of the shofar? Hashem is. So our involvement in the ram's horn, right, brings about a blessing to us, which involves the ram's horn, which is the horn of Yitzchak. And they said that about this, and they said that about this very same bread, that because it is an accessory of the commandment, and throughout the will of God is done, blessing will cling to it more. Now this, and this, what he really means here, is he's saying it like this. They said it about the very same bread. This very same bread, we know, stayed fresh from Shabbos to Shabbos. Right? What did that come from? He says that also comes from this idea. Being that this bread is used for a mitzvah, so now blessing clings to it. Not only does blessing, his point was to say that the involvement, our involvement in the mitzvah of bread brings blessing to our bread. What he's saying is, the same concept extends to the idea that because the bread was used for the mitzvah, therefore the bread, blessing clings to the bread. And so each one of the priests who had from it coming to him would be twice satiated. Here's another thing. Anybody who ate from this bread, he was a little bit filled in. It had a tremendous power of satiation. Why? Because it's used for the mitzvah. So this is the idea that he is applying to the fire on the Mizbeach. The fire on the Mizbeach, I don't know why did Hashem give us this extra mitzvah of a fire on the Mizbeach, a fire that's besides the fire that burns the Karbanos. Why is he giving us a mitzvah of fire? The answer is, because by giving us a mitzvah of fire, our involvement in fire in the service of Hashem brings blessing to our fire, which is to our health. Okay, so that's this conclusion of this part of the Sefer HaChinuch. Again, I apologize for a skip for getting that piece.
The showbread is not eaten during the weekdays.
No, so the Kohanim take it on Shabbos and eat it.
When you go like now on Shabbos and you eat Chali and Shabbos, it seems to me tastes differently than if you had Chali. You know, sort of like the whole idea of Shabbos eating the Chali seems.
Yeah, but the same. But you wouldn't have that same piece that you baked the week before and stay fresh the whole week.
Right.
So that's the point here. That's the point here.
But it was left over. You have it on Monday. It doesn't taste, you know, with a fresh Chali and the Shabbos.
That is true. Okay. Let's now turn to page 570. Okay, so after that pasuk that tells us that we're supposed to have a fire, that we should make sure that a fire constantly burns on the Mizbeach. Now, right after that, the Torah starts with a discussion about the mincha, the meal offering. The Zeis Torah Samincha, this is the law of the mincha. Hakrev Oysa B'nai Aaron L'fnei Hashem, the sons of Aaron shall offer it before Hashem, al pnei Mizbeach, in the front of the altar. The hay remaineth bekumtzai, and he shall lift up or raise from it with his kaimitz. We'll explain what that means. The kohen. Misaylas hamincha mishamna, from the flour of the mincha and its oil. The eskal alavaina, and with all the frankincense. Asher lamincha, that's on the mincha. Viktira mizbeach, he offered this on the altar. Beach nichayach haskaratza lashem. This Askarasa, this, the way they translate Askarasa, its memorial portion, that is what's offered on the altar as a sweet smelling aroma to Hashem. So when you bring a karban mincha, you bring flour, and you have it mixed with oil, and you bring it with this spice called levaina, frankincense on it, the Kohen takes three fingers, these three, and he scoops it up, He then smooths out the ends, one with his thumb, one with his pinky, and that which he has now scooped up, he throws on the fire. That's the first step of the mincha. Next pasuk test, v'hanoiseres mimena, and what's left over from it, yoichlu Aaron avanav. Aaron and his sons will now eat. Matzis teyachav amokim kadesh, they shall be eaten as matzis. And they can't become chametz, right? The Kohanim are going to eat it. This is part of the mitzvah. Part of the mitzvah is that they eat it. It's not the part of bringing a korban mincha is that the kmitza, the kometz, is burned. Now the rest of it is eaten by the Kohanim. This is all part of the. This is all part of what happens with a korban mincha. Matzis say achal. It's got to be eaten as matzis. They're going to bake it, but they have to make sure that it doesn't become chametz. But makim kaddish. It's going to be eaten as matzis in a holy place. But chatzar oil mayed yechlua. In the courtyard of the Mishkan, shall they eat it? Loi se'afeh chametz. It shall not be baked chametz. Chelkam nasati oisa mi'ishai. Their portion, it is their portion. I have given it for my burnt offerings. Kodesh kodeshim hi. It is holy of holies. Kachatas v'cha asham. Like the sin offering and like the asham, and like the guilt offering. So the leftover of the oil and of the flour is given to the Kohanim. And there are specific laws of how they are to eat it. So the Al-Sheikh has a very interesting comment here. And the Al-Sheikh says that a person can takes a look at a korban mincha, and he can really be wondering, you know, how much goes to Hashem? Very little. Most of it goes to the Kohanim. If you look at other sacrifices, if it's a burnt offering, the entire animal is burnt. If it's not, then you've got some significant parts of it that are burnt, and other parts are eaten. But there are significant parts of the animal that go for a korban to Hashem. So you may wonder, you know, so little of this goes to Hashem. But the first time we're introduced to a korban mincha, which is in Parashas Vayikra, over there the Torah says that it's a korban mincha l'Hashem. It's a mincha to God. He said, but you may wonder, says the Asher, if you're calling it a mincha to Hashem, I mean, it's a mincha to the Kohen. It's not a gift to Hashem, so a little bit it goes to Hashem. It's a gift to the Kohen. So therefore, says the Asher, this is what the psukim we just read are coming to address. Zois tayres ha-mincha. This is the law of the mincha. Hakrev ois b'nei Aaron lifnei Hashem apnei ha-mizbeach. The children of Aaron bring it before God. Don't ever think that this is an offering for the Kohanim. The Kohanim take what you bring and they bring it before Hashem. This is a gift to Hashem. What happens? The Kohen then again raises from it for his three fingers from a kmitza, from the oil and from the flour and from the oil, and he offers it on the mizbeach askaras al Hashem. Okay. Hashem is saying, you bring this flour and oil and frankincense that you're bringing it before me. What do I tell you to do? Take a little bit and burn it. That's enough. That's what I'm telling you to do. You go ahead and burn it. Now, the rest of it, Aaron and his sons are eating. The rest that they're eating is because I'm giving it to them. The Kohen brings the mincha, brings the oil, the flour before me. It's a gift to me. It's mine. I go ahead and I take off a little bit and burn it, as if I took the whole thing, as if I took the whole thing for myself and I burned it. Now what's left over, I am letting the Kohanim have it. I am the one giving it to the Kohanim. And you know how you see that? Because matzah is te'ochel. They can only eat it as matzah. If it was their thing, right? Let them take it home and do what they want. But makim kadesh, they have to eat it in the makim kadesh. They can't just take it anywhere. They have to eat it in the Beis HaMikdash. It's holy of holies. Don't make it as chametz. Chalkam nasati seme'ishai. It's a portion that I've given them from my burnt offering. This is not a gift to the Kohen. It's a gift to me. And the whole thing is a gift to me. I take my part. The whole thing is a gift to me. It's all my gift. How is now what's performed here with this gift? What's done? I take a little bit is burnt on the fire, and the rest of it I allow the Kohanim to have. But it's not theirs. It wasn't brought for them as a gift. It's brought to me as a gift. It's brought to me as an offering, and I'm the one who now basically says, okay, a little bit we'll put on the fire, the rest of it to the Kohanim, but it's using the term that Ashach uses is the Gemara term, Mesholchan Gavoya Zachu. It came, they received it from the table of high. This is what Hashem has given them. It's Hashem, this is a gift to Hashem, but now Hashem allows them to partake from. But it should never be seen as it's a gift to the Kohen. The Kohen, no one should look at it like that. The Kohen don't look at it like that. The person bringing it doesn't look at it like that. So even though we find so much more of other Karbanis going to Hashem, so to speak, more than to the Kohen, and here it seems the opposite, let's make it clear, says the Psukim. This is Hakriv Eisel Lepnei Hashem. It's brought before Hashem. The whole thing is a gift to Hashem. And then Hashem says, a little bit is burned, the rest of the Kohanim, I am giving the rest of the Kohanim, or I'm allowing the Kohanim to partake from the rest. But don't forget, it's still mine. It's not theirs. It's still mine that I'm allowing them to partake. Proof being, the laws that govern how they eat it.
But this is true for all sacrifices, or for this particular one?
Most typical menachas, this is what's
done. It's just that in the previous handout that you gave us, there was a sentence about if you bring him something he likes, he will pray for you that much harder or something. Mm-hmm.
That is true. That's from his benefit.
But it's for Hashem.
Yeah, but for your...
It's like an escrow.
So how does it relate to you in that sense? Right. I guess because of the fact that at the end of the day, right, this was the animal that you brought.
Right.
And at the end of the day, he's benefiting from it. And that helps him daven for you.
Right.
That's more of a human reaction.
Right. Okay.
He brings it. Again, he's the one who brings it.
Hashem,
fine, but he brought it.
He brought it, yeah.
And at the end of the day, the Kohen is getting it. Hashem gave it to the Kohen, right. But it starts off from what you're bringing. And therefore, just from that kind of, you know, call it human interaction or human perception, that helps him pray for you.
But the quality of the animal makes a difference still?
That's something else.
Like an etro.
That's something else. But right now, the point is, right here, the point is that the Ashach is saying, the Psukim are teaching us that as even though so little of this goes to Hashem and so much of it goes to the Kohen, just make it clear this is not a gift to the Kohen. This is a gift to Hashem, which the Kohen is allowed to partake from. Okay. Let's take a look now on Pasuk. Ketes Zion, which is on page 572. V'chol, this is Pasek Tezayin, V'chol minchas kohen, kolol tiyeloi se'ochel. Every meal offering of a kohen is to be entirely burned, it shall not be eaten. Now what that means is that anybody else who brings a mincha, as we learned before, there is the kmitza, is burnt on the mizbeach, and the rest of it goes to the Kohanim. But if a Kohen brings the Mincha, what happens? The Kemitz is burnt on the fire, and so is everything else. The Kemitz is done, it's separated, it's done. It's done, it's thrown on the fire, and the rest of it is also burnt.
The Kohen is bringing
his own carbon Mincha for whatever reason.
So he doesn't deserve to eat it, I guess.
The Kohen brings his own carbon, is bringing his own carbon Mincha, and the other Kohanim, forget about him, not just him, the other Kohanim don't eat from it, nobody eats from it. If it's brought from a Kohen, the Kemitz is done, it's burnt on the fire, and then everything else is burnt. He doesn't eat from it, nor do the other Kohanim eat from it. Now let's take a look at the Sefer HaChinuch to understand this mitzvah. To not eat the meal offering of the priest. To not eat of the meal offering of the priest, as it is stated, and every meal offering of a priest shall be whole. It shall not be eaten. The word kolil comes from the word kol, which means whole, but it means completely burnt. The foundation that we said at the beginning, that the intention of the sacrifice to arouse the heart of the one that offers it, is from the roots of the commandment. For if the priest eats his meal offering, his heart will not properly be aroused about it, as it is similar in his eyes to his baking bread for his need in eating it. Meaning, if you, the point of bringing a carbon is always supposed to have some kind of a message to it, right? Whatever carbon we have, it has a message. In the very least, the fact that I bring something that belongs to me and now I offer it up on the altar as a fire, and the fact that I have to give up something because of my sin is meant to impress upon me the severity of my sin. But if it comes out that I bring this mincha, and at the end I eat it, then it's going to take away from that focus. You're not going to see it. So the intent of instead of arousing your heart because of what it symbolizes, you'll end up looking at it to some degree. You know, part of it is going to be burnt on the altar. But if at the end of the day you're going to be eating it, you're going to be eating most of it, then it's not going to arouse, it's not going to be in your eyes like something that should inspire you to tshuva, but rather as something for your benefit. And even though his fellows will eat from his and he from theirs, what he's really trying to say here is, all right, you're telling me that if I'm a Kohen, I'm bringing the offering's supposed to arouse me to tshuva, and if I eat from it, it's not going to arouse me. So you don't eat it. Let the other Kohanim eat it.
No.
Says the Sefer HaChinuch, and even though his fellows will eat from his and he from theirs, it will all add up to one. Meaning, at the end of the day, if when I bring a carbon mincha, you eat it, so when you bring it, I eat it. So it may not be there. Again, it's going to come out that, you know, I'm not directly partaking from it, right? But at the end of the day, the whole thing involves a certain degree of, you know, I give you, you give me. At the end of the day, it becomes seen as something of a personal benefit more than the carbon that's supposed to arouse a person's thoughts. And therefore, hence it commanded that it be completely burned and it cannot be eaten by any man. Okay, so that's the explanation the Sefer HaChinuch gives to why the Mincha V'Kohen is completely burnt. Okay. You know, it's interesting, just as a question, if a Kohen brings a carbon shlamim, right, if a Kohen brings a carbon Pesach, right, he eats from the carbon Pesach, okay, that's whatever. If a Kohen brings a carbon chatas, other Kohanim are going to eat from the carbon chatas, I believe. So why is it different? I'm not sure exactly.
Different sins.
No, it's the same thing. If he does a sin like anybody, the same kind of sin, he's a carbon chatas. Okay, let's try to conclude with a thought on Pesach that relates to the parsha. You're not going to have it here, but if you take a look on page 574, V'zayis Torah Sevach HaShlamim, this is the law of the Shlamim offering, Asher Yakriv HaShem, that one will offer to HaShem, Emal Toy De Yakrivenu, if he brings it as a Thanksgiving offering. You can have a carbon Shlamim that's a regular carbon Shlamim, or just call it just the carbon Shlamim, and then there's a carbon Shlamim that's brought as a Torah, a Thanksgiving offering. When a person experiences certain miracles, certain salvations, he has to bring a carbon to the Thanksgiving offering. So there is in the Haggadah on Pesach, just to give an example, okay. So when we read the Haggadah on Pesach, we read about the 10 plagues. And then after we say the 10 plagues, we enumerate the 10 plagues, Damash B'nei Akinim, etc., we bring a line that says, Rabbi Yehuda, Hayanoisim Behem Simonim. The sage Rabbi Yehuda made a mnemonic to remember the 10 plagues. Tetzach, Adash, Ba'achav. You have one word, Tetzach, Damash B'nei Akinim, Adash, Ayin Dalet Shin, Arav Dever Shchin, Ba'achav, Barad Arba, Ba'achav, Barad Arba, Chayshach, B'chayris. A mnemonic. Now, a mnemonic is usually made to remember something. And you know, the Gemara brings down lots of mnemonics, not that we necessarily pay too much attention, to be honest. We don't always pay too much attention to them because we're not really trying to remember them by heart, trying to remember the whole Gemara by heart. But if you're supposed to be remembering this whole list of Gemara to a certain degree to try to remember it, they make these mnemonics, these signs to remember, and they create these words, and each word really, each letter of each word is meant to be, it represents another idea that's being mentioned. So that's what we have here, the Tzachah v'Hashpacha. We have three words, and each letter represents a concept, represents whatever, represents something. But typically, these words mean something. The words typically have a meaning, and because the words have a meaning, now you remember it. Okay? But the Tzachah v'Hashpacha, there's no meaning to it. It's just you just put these letters together and made it. Instead of now trying to say all 10 words, now you'll say three words.
Which is easier,
but typically that's not what a siman is about. Typically a siman are words that make sense. And this is the question of the Teferis of the Taisvis Yantif in Maseches Abbas. And so he has his explanation. He said that he said in a drasha on Shabbos HaGadol. And he took the word Tzach, which is Dalid Tzadik Ches. And he said instead of reading it as the Tzach, read it as Ditzach, like the word Ditza, Gilarina Ditza v'chedva, Ditza, which is an expression of joy, and Ditzach means your joy. Ditzach, your joy. Now, then he has his own explanation for the words Adash Ba'achav. We're not going to go into that, but the Chasam Sefer, when he explains the word, when he tries to give meaning to the words, so he starts up with the tzach as ditzach, like the Taisvis Yantif. And then he says, adash, ayin dalet shin, is similar to the word adasha. Adasha is a lentil.
A what?
A lentil.
A lentil.
We are familiar with the fact that an egg is a bread, is a food of a mourner, that because it's cyclical and it doesn't have a mouth, it represents mourning. Well, if you look in halacha, it's not only eggs. Lentils also is a food of a mourner. Also because of its round shape. Okay? So Adash is referring to a lentil, which is alluding to mourning. Ba'achav already, here he seems to play around a little bit, and he makes the word Ba'achav itself an acronym. And Ba'achav's, the base stands for Biyos, as Aleph is Kel, God, Chai, living, Bekarbeinu in our midst. B'yais kel chai b'kirbeinu. So put it all together. Ditzach. Your joy is adash, that you can mourn ba'achav, with the living God in our midst. That even when we are in a state of mourning, or even when we're in a state of gullus, we still have a ditzach, we still have a joy. Why? Because Hashem is in our midst. And because Hashem is in our midst, even in our tzaris, we have a sense of joy because we understand that the tzaris are not just our abandonment, but rather that Hashem has His reasons for them being. So according to this, the tzach hadash ba'achav, right, should be ditzach, is your joy, adash, lentil, a simon to mourning, ba'achav. That word already you have to remember, you got to remember what it stands for. B'yais kel chai b'kerbeinu. With the fact that the living God is in our midst. When you have that, even though you have an adash, you have a mourning, you can still have ditzach, you can still have joy, because of the fact that you recognize that Hashem is with us in all that's happening, and it's always for our good. We wish you all a chag kasher v'sameach.
Could you keep looking back at the names like Rashi, you know, those are... Well, you don't see that in other religions, I don't think.